Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Thursday morning. It is the Thursday, the 12th of February. Mm. And before we get our panel started, I just want a quick shout out, a very happy birthday to our wonderful producer, Sarah LaDuke.
Really?
Yes.
Is there Where's the cake?
I believe it's coming later.
This is great. She keeps a low profile over there, that end of the newsroom. I didn't know this.
Yeah. We're very excited.
Could have bought her a bottle of booze or something. What do you need, bud? Alan's here, everybody.
Yeah, you can.
Walks in.
Alan is here, starts.
Like a 112-pound rhino running into the room.
A very quiet entrance.
Yeah.
I was just wishing our Sarah LaDuke a happy birthday today.
Happy birthday.
Our producer, Sarah. So I was doing that because we want to wish her a happy birthday and also because we were vamping till you guys get in.
Yeah, when we got here, we were taping the media project.
How was that? Good show?
Oh, boy.
Yeah?
The best.
One of your best?
Lively.
Lively?
That's good. I accused Rosemary of being purposely provocative.
Me.
Imagine that.
Well, I hope you do that on our show.
Okay, what do you got?
All right, let me introduce you all, and then we'll get to the good stuff. Joining us today, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe.
You get that good Barry White voice.
Froggy.
Look at that. Oh, good.
You remember Froggy?
I do remember
Froggy.
From the Little Rascals.
Yeah, the Little Rascals. Froggy.
Froggy. Yeah. University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
Excellent. And WAC newsman Ray Graff.
Hello.
Good morning.
You're trying to provoke
Raymond.
Me.
She's not a soprano. She's, I would say.
No, alto.
At best.
Alto.
Sometimes tenor.
I can't.
Depending on your mood.
Depending on the topic.
Pete was a tenor.
Pete was a tenor?
Of course.
There you go.
Okay, I don't know who Pete was.
Pete Seeger.
Oh, Pete Seeger. Oh,
yeah.
God. Oh, God. Oh,
exactly.
My God. It's
heresy.
Long.
You didn't know who he was?
I didn't. It seemed out of context. Like, okay, I get it.
It sure did.
All right. So let us begin with the news of the day. First of all, I guess let's just talk about this first because we can. There's not a lot to say other than just how sad it is. But we learned last night that Bob Simon, the CBS correspondent for 60 Minutes, longtime CBS correspondent, 24 Emmys, I believe, the man had to his credit, one of the finest international reporters, born reporters that had been working, was and I don't think this is disparaging in any way. I certainly don't mean it in disparaging in any way, but just an old, good old style Murrow boy journalist who was really, really good, and was killed last night in a car accident on the west side of Manhattan, and 73 years old. Just had a story on 60 Minutes on Sunday about the movie Selma, and you know, this was a guy who was held captive for 40 days by Saddam Hussein's government, and it doesn't. You know, I don't think you get much better than that. And looking at those, you know, those old Don Hewitt days of 60 Minutes of the reporting that they did on that show. But he came to 60 Minutes later, but the reporting that he did both for CBS and for 60 Minutes on CBS, at least to me, was exemplary in almost every way.
I believe he was a Hardman Fellow at North Adams.
I just need your...
Did I do something wrong?
I couldn't hear you.
Oh, I said I believe he was a
Hardman.
Yeah,
that's the mic. Yeah. We're talking.
He's a Hardman Fellow at North Adams at the Mass College of Liberal Arts. And I remember him well there. And Rex was, and I guess I was, and Joe, were you?
I believe.
Yeah, yeah, Joe was. Yeah.
He was an amazing foreign correspondent and war correspondent, as you mentioned. And yet the story I remember the most from him, he did it last year, was about a band in a poor area of Latin America. And it was all put together with instruments that were made from trash.
Yeah, I saw
and
that.
From the community. It was an amazing terrific piece of journalism, yeah, which I guess translates across all the genres he worked in.
There's a breaking news. Could
sad.
I read some breaking
yeah.
news? Which I think you're going to be pleased with, Joe. This is from the current magazine online.
Yes.
The voice of our industry.
Yes.
NPR making changes to voice of underwriting credits. NPR is moving announcer Sabrina Farhi out of her primary, in quotes, role reading its sponsorship credits, according to an email to member stations. you have made my day, Current, because I thought she was terrible at pajama stuff. And
I liked her.
Why? What did she do that was bad?
Her voice.
Oh, you didn't like
it? Was annoying.
Voice.
Really
voice.
Annoying. And now come 14 people writing to me saying, you're annoying.
Yeah.
What was interesting about it is that they had a longtime voice who had been doing it for years. And they replaced it with a younger voice and a female voice. Both, I believe, admirable. However, whatever her credentials were, as Alan says so many times, what really counts is what comes out the other side of the radio. And that was of concern for many of us in the member stations because, and I say this on behalf of all of us with great pride, that, you know, you like to make it seamless between the NPR
right.
sound and the local sound. And when she would come on, it sounded like you were suddenly going to a local station.
I heard her yesterday, and then she was followed by our Katie Britton doing a promo, and Katie Britton sounded like Ozma of Oz compared to this.
As a print person, this is all fascinating. Many of my friends who have gone from print into broadcast take lessons to acquire this voice that you all have. So they speak more slowly.
Well, I do timber. Not to tell too many tales out of school, and if I do this, I apologize.
No, please, we want the inside dope joke.
Okay. Well, when some of the member stations went to NPR and said we don't like this, they said, well, we have heard a number of complaints. We're working. We feel that we're working with her on what the job is of actually the pronunciation of the credits, and then we'll work on her voice. And I thought
they never got to stage two.
That sounds odd to me. It would seem to me that you would like hire somebody with the voice and then work on the other stuff. But that was just, and I don't mean a character assassination on this poor woman.
No.
I just don't know why she would have been hired in the first place. But Ray, you liked her, so
as far
I apologize.
As the sound of the voice, I found it refreshing. I thought it was great.
But what, well, she mispronounced things?
No, I did not hear that.
We're talking about we're talking about the sound of the voice.
The sound of her voice.
Which I find personally very grating.
I want to tape.
But then again, I find Ray very grating. Wow.
Right back at you, Slim.
There was there was an upspeak quality to it.
Yeah.
You mean like this?
Yeah.
Oh,
that
I can't do
you
it.
Don't expect to hear, you know, that you don't expect to hear on radio or public radio without sounding too pretentious.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So what were the grounds for the hiring, as you say, Joe? You know, what was it that made somebody hire her when so many of us really were annoyed by her voice?
Well, that's always a good question. But maybe maybe she worked in the trenches for a long time and was had worked very hard and was the second in command. I have, or you know, the second in line of that job. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I just want to get back to Bob Simon for a moment, and then we'll move on. But, here was a guy, 73 years old, and while, you know.
You think 73 is old? You mentioned that.
Yes.
What? I mentioned that he was 73. I didn't mention
73
that he was
years young, he meant to say.
Yes. But he was 73 years old, and he was, actually what I was going to say is that, and you can take this however you want to take it, but given the 60 Minutes model, that means he probably had another good 20 years left in him.
Sure. That's right.
So,
as do I here.
Absolutely. So, again, using the 60 Minutes model. But knowing his stories, but they had a great, they were playing a great thing this morning on NPR of him talking to, he had received a Lifetime Achievement Award, I believe, from the Emmys. And he said that one of the things when he was interviewing people that he hated was when people used his name. So if they said, well, you know, Bob, I think one of the things you have to keep in mind, Bob, he said, that's when you know they're lying.
I actually like that.
That's the Dale Carnegie method.
And he said, if they call you Professor Shartok or Mr. Donahue, then they're telling the truth. And he said, if you feel that they're lying, and you don't want to constantly feel like who you're interviewing is lying, then do what I have done over the last 3 years and do a lot of animal stories.
A lot of, a lot of what's going
on? Animal stories.
You know, animals don't lie to you.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think he was terrific.
But yeah, great
some,
guy.
But I take some exception to that in that when the chancellor of the state university says, and I'm interviewing her the other day and she said Alan, I was very pleased that she said Alan or the congressional corner. I'm very pleased.
Yeah,
but
once or repeatedly? I think the point here was repeatedly.
I always say the more the better.
No. Okay.
I think Bob Simon has a point. I'm going to be on the list for that.
Rosemary?
I'm especially attuned to this because I had an interview yesterday with a woman. This interview will not air, by the way.
Oh, okay.
It will not air.
Because?
Because I just felt that the woman was not skilled in her field of study. Did not know what she was talking about, and
hasn't
kept on saying my
us.
And has said over and over and over and over again my name, and she was also just pushing a product much more than I would have liked.
Yeah,
I don't have to give her a name, do I?
Well, I mean, we'd all be much more interested if you did.
You wouldn't know. If I mentioned it, you would know who it was.
No, we've all made mistakes. And I have to tell you, you know, I do these hour-long conversations on Thursday. And every once in a while, not often, but every once in a while, you're 10 minutes in and you say, oh, God,
is this
a mistake?
Okay, so this will be a segment instead of an hour long.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I have to do a commercial, though, for you guys this
past
week. This
is public radio.
Joe's discussion with Isabel Allende.
It's terrific.
And Alan's Vox Pop program with the economist from Vassar. Mm-hmm. Fabulous.
Nice.
Fabulous
radio. That
was
a great show.
It was a wonderful afternoon.
All right. Well, thank you.
You can get it online.
Yes, WAMC.org. You can also go to WAMC.org and comment on whatever we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes.
Which ain't much.
And we'll take a break. We'll come back. And then, actually, if I get out at 29, can you get everything in? Okay, let's just do that. So we'll real quick go to our first story, because otherwise we won't have much time when we come back. So let's talk about ISIS and the president's looking for approval. Alan, of course, talked about this yesterday, and the president made his thoughts quite clear on this yesterday. So I'm curious as to...
He's between a rock and a hard place.
What you all think.
He knows he can't. He doesn't want back into Iraq, and he doesn't want back into Afghanistan, and with unlimited time. So he phrases the ask to Congress in such a way that he makes it clear this is for a limited amount of time. And by the time, you know, a couple of years goes by, what does he want? He wanted 3 years, right?
Right.
And that, of course, would mean after he's gone.
Which he said exactly that. He said the next president will decide whether to ask Congress to re-up that.
Yeah.
So that was part of his thinking.
Sure, but he doesn't want his legacy to be the committing of yet another group of our finest kids to a war front because he's getting a lot of credit for having pulled everybody out.
Well, he didn't pull everybody out, and he is getting credit maybe he shouldn't have because he's talked for his entire administration about getting out and, in fact, has engaged the United States in lots of war, expanded beyond Bush. It seemed to me that he went to Congress with a carefully worded proposal to get approval right away and consensus. Like, I do want to fight this war, but I'm giving you some of my powers. He actually is offering more control to Congress over the making of war than we've seen in modern times.
Well, I think he's got them.
The New York Times calls it limits and leeway.
I remember the headline, and it's real accurate. But it seems to have backfired that the Republicans aren't taken in by it.
They say it's not enough.
They say it's not enough, and the Democrats say, whoa, you're giving away the whole power of the presidency. So I don't know that he succeeded in his effort here.
I think he did. I think he set it up in such a way that he looks like he's limited it. The American people will go along with it, I think. And I think at this stage, he's, you know, just waving a red flag in front of the Republicans. and he's getting a lot of credit for it.
Well, man, the Republicans, they don't deserve maybe some consideration the way they're behaving. They've spent all this time on, again, trying to repeal Obamacare and...
But on
the pipeline, oh my goodness, they're passing that. And meanwhile, Homeland Security runs out of money in 2 weeks. They're taking a vacation next week.
Call that a tease, because we'll talk about all of that when we come back. We're going to take a break. We'll catch up on some stuff, and we'll be back. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. It is Thursday, the 12th of February. It's the day before
Friday, the 13th.
That's right.
What is Valentine's Day?
14th.
Saturday, dude.
Saturday.
Get the flowers now, or Roselle's not going to be happy.
Chocolate.
Again.
Okay. We have a couple letters, and we'll do that, and then we'll get into the meat of the matter, as it were.
Okay. Wow, panel, wow. I thought it was only me wondering why they gave her the job. This pajamagram spot was like fingernails on a chalkboard, right? The blame must fall squarely on the management who put her in an obviously wrong position. It does make me wonder if the farm team at NPR is really this thin. Well, to be fair, what NPR does, and most of their stories, are quite good. My arguments are not with the reporters or the sound of reporters' voices, but this was just really very different. Yeah.
Could I offer a counterpoint from the web? This is from the website. Jonathan on the website says, I could not disagree more about the voice that you object to. Her upbeat, rising tone is much more natural and conversational than the woman whose voice goes down with every syllable. I find her voice objectionable. Thank you, Jonathan, for that. Appreciate that very much.
I'm with Ray. Is that the one you just read?
No.
The voice we heard last week was refreshing and bright. I find the current voice annoyingly sing-songy. You're not with Ray. You're with me. Not with Ray.
Let go of your anger.
As if placating a truculent 90-year-old, she needs voice coaching to not end all her sentences with a sliding down note. Well, it's getting confusing. I'm not going to read that other one.
I'm also reading another letter. Some of the comments from the on the NPR page.
Oh yeah, what are they saying?
The person that says, I guess it was WBEZ in Chicago. I guess had put together a collection of the letters regarding the voice, and they said the upshot is this is a croaking, creaking, irritating, raspy, untrained voice which leaves her gasping for air, the sound of which producers at NPR refuse to edit, it seems, at the end of each announcement.
And I also think she was an alto.
Is that okay?
Okay.
No.
Well, also, she had the job for a year
I was
and
just
she's
kidding.
Moved on. All right. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead and read more.
Are you done? Or
no.
Okay, because we have lots of good stuff
topic,
to talk about.
Topic, let's do a topic.
Well, let's do something that is not an
NPR. Yeah, because we got a lot on this.
Okay.
somebody's comment just came in, and it's hilarious.
It's refreshing to hear about someone losing their job in media because they're actually bad, as opposed to just being a bold-faced liar.
No, this one.
Oh, I thought she did a great job speaking German for 20 minutes the other day.
Angela Merkel, we played that on the air the other day. She spoke German, and fortunately, we had to move on. But there we go. All right, let's move on to other topics. As sad as that is, because we're having a delightful time with these other things. Rosemary, as I said, teased two of the stories we're going to be talking about. First of all, the House passed the Keystone Bill despite the president's opposition. The House on Wednesday passed a bill approving construction of the Keystone XL pipeline, setting up a confrontation with President Obama, who has vowed to veto the measure. The bill, which passed the Senate last month, headed to Mr. Obama's desk Wednesday night. Mr. Obama's expected veto of the bill will not represent a rejection of the pipeline itself. Because the pipeline crosses an international border with Canada, the president retains the authority to make the final decision on whether to build it.
Okay, I'm angry at both of them. The president said he would make a decision once and for all on the pipeline when all of the reports were in. That happened last week. We need a final decision. And second, Congress is ditzing around with this stuff when Homeland Security is going to run out of money. Stop doing Obamacare. That's a done deal. Stop dealing with the pipeline. The president's going to take care of it in any way he wants. Start dealing with the budget.
I am going to stick with what Mrs. Zwick told me. in the eighth grade, Shartok, keep shut, because I agree with you.
Wow. You agree with Rosemary?
I do.
Good.
Do you disagree?
No, I do think that, you know, government should work this way. Congress says one thing. If the president doesn't like it, he vetoes it. That's
well,
what
but
happens.
What's their motive? Raymond, you're in a particularly cantankerous mood this morning.
Nonsense.
But see? But what... But you know what? Why? What's the motivation that the Republicans
what do they
are doing
gain?
This stuff?
Yeah, you know what do they gain? The president gets to make this decision.
I think
and they
get. They money.
Don't like that, but they get to.
They get money. I think
oh,
that's
for
what this
supporters.
Is about. Yeah, they're catering to their natural supporters.
Okay. Well, so, it passed on a fairly bipartisan.
Well, look, there are people in Louisiana who want jobs for their people and others. But you know, that's so there are some Democrats. We have a lot of blue dog Democrats in the United States. But the question I've always had is, why don't they just, if they're the Canadians, it's dirty oil. Why don't the Canadians, if they really feel so strongly about it, ship it from there?
I think they would if they could. I mean, part of the issue here is environmental, that even if the pipeline never bursts and spews horrible petroleum all over our environment, it will. The record's not good. But even if that's not true, you put a pipeline in so the Canadians can ship out the shale oil, and that means they're going to expand shale oil and fracking and all that stuff in Canada, which results in more global climate change. And that's what the president is looking at, taking the bigger picture rather than simply jobs, which appear to be pretty temporary. You build a pipeline, then the jobs go away.
Politically, doesn't this help the president, though? If the bill gets to his desk and he vetoes it, isn't this a win for him?
How so?
In the eyes of those who take your view, Rosemary.
No, in the eyes of my view, it's like, why are you wasting time on this? It's
but
ridiculous.
That's what Congress does. Don't they just, that's basically their number one job description?
Well, this Congress.
We'll go in, we'll blah, blah, blah.
So that's your argument? That's what Congress does to
no,
be
no,
obstructionist?
No, it's not being obstructionist. The president could veto it and will veto it. But
and
what I'm saying is,
and they know the president will veto it, right?
But does that
so
make
why,
it?
So why, as Rosemary says, why are they... Why are they waving a red flag in front of
him? He'll either veto it or he will make his decision, which he has promised, based on the available information on the environment and the economics. And it might very well be to go through with the pipeline. As you mentioned, it does have bipartisan support. But the act of Congress is immaterial to this process. It is simply a stand against the president. Stop it. We are facing another partial shutdown in government, and that is not being dealt with. And we're running out of time unless they decide not to take their congressional recess.
And should I just point out that this is a president who is for fracking?
Correct. Yeah.
So let's remember that this is not some wide-eyed guy out there, you know, being crazy on energy. I disagree with him on this, but he's a pro-fracker.
This is all posing. It's posing. It's nothing more than that. Waste of time.
So let's just, we're going to shift slightly. And the article in the Washington Post today says the Republican honeymoon is over in Capitol Hill. Just a month into their taking full control of Congress, Republican leaders in the House and Senate are at odds over how to avoid shutting down the Department of Homeland Security as part of an immigration fight with the Obama administration. House Speaker John Boehner and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell were at an impasse Wednesday over how to pass legislation to fund DHS before funding runs out on the 27th of February. Tension is high among GOP factions that can agree only the Democrats are to blame.
Yeah. It's really interesting to watch Republicans kind of infighting. They cannot figure out how to get this bill through in a way that they want, that hurts the president and gets their point across. Mm. So, and the hardliners are again saying, fine, we have to just deal with the Democrats, who have no problem with the immigration reforms of the president. So what we're facing again is a partial shutdown of government. Homeland Security it runs out of money in February, the end of February. And while TSA workers not getting money has a certain appeal to me, we're talking about the National Guard, the Coast Guard, Customs, immigration. There's no money for them. Ted Cruz says, fine. Unbelievable.
Alan, what do you think?
I'm with Rosemary. I just want to read
what
one
the
letter.
What the hell has he been drinking? He's with you all day.
I just want to read one letter, if I may. Alan, geez, your voice sounds like someone who used to make cookies in a hollow tree. Just kidding. Regards from Doug.
A little Keebler elf?
Sure.
Yeah.
He'll make them, but not eat them.
But that's what we're here for.
Yeah. That's right. That's where we come in. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Huntsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. edith-huntsberger.artistwebsites.com. And Oblong Books, presenting Eric Larson with his new book, Dead Wake, The Last Crossing of the Lewistania, March 10th, 7 p.m., at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park. Tickets required. oblongbooks.com.
Exactly what we were doing during the break is keeping an eye on the brighter skies. Yeah. Everyone yeah. keeping just looking at the glass half full that was on the table and yeah. having a lively, vibrant discussion.
Is it going to snow today?
What?
Is it going to snow today?
It's going to snow a little bit.
Okay.
It's a strong to severe possibility of that.
We'll get a full forecast with Angela Merkel coming up later in the program. Let us go back to our discussion.
The Obstructionist Congress.
The Obstructionist right. Congress, a term.
Can I just object to that?
That Ray objects to. I will allow you to make your objection, and then we'll watch the hilarity.
We hear this a lot, and we hear this from both the right and the left at different times in our history, depending on who the president is and who controls the Congress. So there were those on this panel who called this Congress obstructionist, taking away the specifics and the very well put point that these people on the panel are probably correct about that. Mm-hmm. Calling Congress obstructionist because it disagrees with the president. At one point, when there was a Democratic Congress, I wonder if certain panelists here objecting to everything the Congress was objecting to, everything that the Republican president wanted to do, they were not obstructionists, but they were in fact standing on principle.
Well, so, okay, did you say make your point?
I'm not done.
So sorry.
What I'm seeing here is a double standard in the media.
Okay, so first of all, is there something called right and wrong? It's not only that the Democrats do it and the Republicans do it. When you get to the substance of the issue, it may be that one group is right or wrong. I would call your attention to one Tip O'Neill and President Ronald Reagan. They got along fine, very well. They passed all kinds of bills together. They figured out what they wanted to do. This group of Republicans who are in the House of Representatives right now, and to some degree that Ted Cruz is in the Senate, they are not looking out for the common good of the American people. They're trying to get him out of there. Mitch McConnell said from the first day his job was to get him out of there. And that's what this is all about. It's not that there's a disagreement or that then Congress isn't allowed to disagree. It's why they're disagreeing. It goes to motive.
Taking what you just said, and for this argument, I will take what you just said as accurate. Do you then concede, sir, that there is a double standard in much of the media when there is a Democratic Congress that is objecting to a Republican president's doings? Go back to the last president.
I can't remember when that happened. The Democrats do disagree with Republicans. That's our system, and that's great. This is a particular problem because the Republicans now have a majority, and they have supposedly an agenda. Let's see it. We're not seeing it. All we're seeing are these futile moves. Futile. You cannot bring back Obamacare. You cannot stop it. You cannot make the president. You can't override his veto.
I'm not arguing any of those points.
Right.
I'm talking about his
media
angle.
What? Just point to it. I think the media is simply pointing out that we don't have anything really good or substantive from the Republicans to report on yet.
I think
what is it?
I think you've expanded the paradigm, sir. And as a result, I'm going to meet you on the
Weehawken plane.
Yes,
done.
Because, sir, as you say, sir. But I just want to make it clear once again, and then that's it for me. You've expanded it from the Republicans have a right to do it because Democrats do it to Republicans. Republicans do it to Democrats. But you forget about, as in my opinion, right and wrong. Why are they doing it? What's the motive, as Rosemary has explicitly laid out here? That's why I have a problem.
So presumably then you are the grand arbiter of what is right and what is wrong.
Well, that's why each of us is sitting here.
I see.
That's why each of us is sitting here.
I will withdraw. I actually defended the Republicans coming in saying, Mitch McConnell, I'm really kind of sick of hearing about how he vowed to get rid of Obama. I think he truly wants to be a great leader of the Senate. So let's see it. I don't see it yet. All he has done, although maybe I'm being unfair to him because it's Boehner and he who are not getting along right now, and McConnell is the one who said, "Look, we can't do this. We got to come up with something else." And Boehner's going, "No, let's go harder. Let's go after the Democrats."
Netanyahu. Let me just quickly ask the political scientists in the room of
where
when it comes to gridlock. And the detachment that it causes amongst the American people because of said gridlock. Mm. To Ray's point, this is something that has seemed to have increased and worsened
Indeed.
Over the past several decades. So at what point do there can certainly be a lot of finger pointing and a lot of different people, but we also have set up, it seems that we have set up a new culture that allows and perpetuates this.
Yes, I think what's happened is that we have set up these two, not to use the same word twice, but paradigm of confrontation. And I think it is somewhat true that the Democrats have done it to the Republicans, you know, and vice versa. But I think that what will win elections in a democracy is when people think that that this is that one side is doing it for the wrong reason.
Okay, and I guess that's the crux of this. But is it wrong for a my point is it wrong for a Democratic Congress to stand against the president?
You mean a Republican Congress?
No. Either one. I'm saying that Republican now, and again, you guys are bringing it back to this Congress, which I'm not defending in any way. I'm taking this as a theoretical discussion, going back to the last time there was a Democratic Congress and a Republican president. Is it wrong for a Democratic Congress to say, here are our principles, or a Republican Congress to say, here are our principles, president is not what—
The answer to that is no. That's
it's good. It's not okay.
It is okay. It's the way the system works is that you have two parties with different principles, and you sit down and you push through a compromise, something that is a little bit of both. That's the way we work. That's not what's happening now.
So then is it fair to call then if the Democrats or Republicans who control both houses of Congress, is it wrong then to call them obstructionist if they say, look, we think the president's dead wrong. This is what we are sending to the president. He may veto it or not.
But Rosemary's point is that that's not what they're doing. They're not giving alternatives. They're not saying, what, to have a dirty oil pipeline is an alternative? That isn't an alternative. What Rosemary is saying and what the president says, if they don't agree with me on immigration, all they have to do is give me a bill. Give me a bill, and they won't do that.
And the same with health care, Alan. What's the alternative?
Let's talk about the timing of that, okay?
Timing of what?
The timing of all they have to do is give me a bill on immigration, okay? Let's talk about that timing. His statement was made after the landslide midterm elections.
Yes.
Not 2 weeks later, he went ahead with executive actions.
Because
much time do you have to?
Oh, come on! When are they going to do it?
You're going to slap together a bill in 2 weeks and get it approved.
They've done things that are faster than that.
I see.
But they had a long time to think about it, way before any of this happened, and they haven't done it. They are opposed to immigration reform. They are opposed to it. So instead of saying, although Boehner and others have said it sometime or another, we're for it. Oh yeah? Well, if you're for it, then show us.
Mm-hmm.
Show us the money. Show us what's happened.
Okay, so then let's go back 8 years or 7 years to the beginning of the Obama presidency.
We'll go back to Adam and Eve.
When both houses of Congress were there, and one of his election campaign issues was, we'll get immigration done my first year. Both houses of Congress, man. You can't blame the Republicans for that. It didn't get done.
I agree with that. I agree with that. He also said the same about Guantanamo and hasn't done it.
Well, he's tried.
He has not tried on immigration.
Well, Ray had one letter in agreement with him. It's not Alan's voice that's annoying. It's the things it's the things he says. That gal's voice on National NPR is lovely, and that's from Frank.
I don't know if that's necessarily agreeing with Ray, is
no.
it?
No. Yeah. I didn't say that about yeah. Alan. Yeah. I think his voice is mellifluous.
All right, let's take a break because we're 10 minutes late, and it just seems like we need one. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering weekend and week-long workshops for adults and teens in a farm setting. Registration now open for 2015 classes, snowfarm.org. And the office of Dr. Vivian Letizia, Woodstock, orthodontic, cosmetic, and general dentistry, serving the Hudson Valley since 1986, woodstockdentist.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel, and thank you very much for being with us. We're going to try to tackle one more topic before we move on this morning, and this is actually something that my dear friend Ray Graff
said. Oh,
I
pointed this out.
Yes.
God, what was I thinking? What was I drinking?
Trying to be an obstructionist and helping the show along.
Trying to help the show along.
Yes, that's right.
This is a scary thing.
Okay, so Samsung, yeah, they make TVs. They make smart TVs,
yeah,
right?
You can talk to them.
Yes, so they take voice commands. So they come with a warning now. If you read the fine print in their privacy policy, it says this. Please be aware that if your spoken words include personal or other sensitive information, that information will be among the data captured and transmitted to a third party through your voice recognition, the privacy policy says. The Daily Beast first noticed the fine print last week, and now it's made its way across the world. Parker Higgins, an activist with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, sent out a tweet comparing the privacy statement to a passage from George Orwell's 1984.
Yeah. God forbid you get a little hey-hey in front of the TV set,
that's
by the way.
I was saying, a little hey-hey in front. Or, you're, as many Americans do, I do not, watch porno on the television. And then you respond, you speak to
you respond. Can we end this show now?
Oh, my God.
Lord, get me out of here.
To bring this to a different level, no less a personage than Bill Gates has warned us against. Why are people not worried about artificial intelligence? Yeah. This is one of those stories. My mother read this story and said, we're not getting one of those.
I'm so curious as to the voice command that could come from watching porn.
Don't stop. By the way, you can read this article on our website. It's on the top of the website, what we call the skybox. You'll see Samsung's privacy policy warns customers if you want to click on that link.
Now, just to be clear and to be fair as well, Samsung says that the voice command functionality is activated using the remote control and can be disabled.
Oh, good.
Well, in other words, if you don't want to use the talking to it and say, give me channel 3, then
have your words transmitted to a third party.
So you
have
think
that.
Anyway.
Well, so
it's
they
like
tell you,
the
that's
Xbox
right.
has a camera and you turn it off, but who knows if it's off.
But don't we have those the same thing with our phones?
Sure.
I mean, the phones have voice recognition.
They can track you wherever you are.
Oh, yeah.
They know where you are. They know what you're saying.
Every law and order.
Go off the grid, man. Off the grid. Get a crank radio and go hide in a hole somewhere and have fun.
Just
Do you have any more of those crank radios left? I may have to make another donation.
On that note, ladies and gentlemen,
what a disturbing show.
Really, this was, I got to get out of here.
Better after
we have
this.
A male and female crank radio. Oh, what information, voice commands they'd send to Samsung Control. Rosemary Mayo.
Work the dynamo. Work the dynamo. Crank, crank, crank.
It's only a circuit. We'll be back with more Roundtable after this.